Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, a visit with Norman Latourelle, the director of the equestrian extravaganza Odisseo under the Big White Tent near ATT Park. You'll also hear about the Teatro Flamenco shows at the Fort Mason Center, a little bit of a live performance here in studio as well. Conductor Stephen Paulson of the Symphony Parnassus will be by to talk about his upcoming concerts. And you'll learn how to succeed in business without really trying. Or at least you'll learn a little bit about that Frank Lesser musical, which is currently at the Marine Memorial, from Bay Area Musicals founder Matthew McCoy. Stay with us. Recording of the Cleveland Orchestra performing the overture to Die Meistersinger von Nuremberg. That's music from the operatic extravaganza currently at the San Francisco Opera, Meistersinger, which has five performances remaining through the 6th of December. Staggering in personnel as well as sheer breadth, the production utilizes some 90 chorus members and is a full evening of theater, clocking out at 5.5 hours. Wagner's epic is conducted by Sir Mark Elder, conductor of this Manchester La Halle Orchestra, who makes his San Francisco Opera debut in these productions. More information about those remaining performances at sfopera.com. Another staggering production, pun intended, gets underway tonight under the Big White Tent adjacent to AT&T Park as the $30 million theatrical extravaganza Odisseo opens its run. It's a show that marries the equestrian arts, stage arts, and high-tech theater effects and features some 75 magnificent men in the form of horses and 45 talented riders thereof, some acrobats, dancers, and musicians thrown into boot. This is the world's largest touring production, the largest touring tent on Earth. The surface area covered by the Big White Top is 68,000 square feet, equal to an NFL football field, plus the biggest stage at some 17,500 square feet, and three IMAX screens that transport and visitors to a phenomenal series of scenes that include a man-made mountain and a field that transforms into a pond thanks to some 20,000 gallons of water that floods the stage for the grand finale. It's the brainchild of Norman Latourelle, one of the founders of Cirque du Soleil and his Montreal-based company Cavalia, which specializes in the creation, production, and touring of innovative shows. Its first show, Cavalia, was seen by some 4 million people worldwide. And I caught up with the director earlier this week when he was in town on the production site to see this production underway just 2 days before the opening, which I mentioned is tonight. So during this interview, you'll hear a healthy share of some heavy equipment working in the background as the workers prepare for the show. Norman Latourelle, bienvenue à Open Air.
Thank you very much.
You're one of the founders of Cirque du Soleil, then delved into this horse-centered extravaganza with Cavalia back in 2003. Now, for those that missed that first Cavalia production, how is this different from Odisseo?
It's another world. Like, Odisseo is, it's bigger, and it's about twice the size of Cavalia, but we push more the integration of the performing arts world into the equestrian arts world, where the first show, Cavalia, was more concentrated to be like a little bit more a horse show, but Odysseo is not a horse show. It's a show about horses. We have a lot of horses. We have 65 in the show, about 45 artists, but we have pushed the limit of what could be achieved as a touring show. And that's what is the big difference also compared to Cirque du Soleil, which is fantastic. But I think with Odysseo, we have pushed the limit of what could be accomplished as a touring show. So Odysseo is comparable to, and maybe better than many, many permanent shows that you can witness in Las Vegas, for instance.
When did the idea of a horse-centered show first come into your consciousness? More interested in the history of man and horse, or?
Well, no, I see the horse more like performers. And I did a show when I left Cirque. I did a show in Canada where I needed just one horse as an extra. And I just realized that when the horse was coming on stage, the audience were not looking at the performers. They were looking at the horse, and the horse was stealing focus. So this show went on for 10 years. So I have just started to be interested in how come, you know, why it's this animal is so attractive. And I was myself attracted by the aesthetic of the horse. I think it's the most beautiful animal on earth. It's strong, it's powerful. And then, you know, you start to know them, and then they're very playful. They always want to play. And so I thought they were great performers. And, you know, all that combined, also they are very noble on, you know, their personality, because they're not predator. So they don't want to attack you. They just want to play with you or be in confidence. So at that time, when I jumped into the horse world, I did not know nothing about horses. I could barely see the difference between a cow and a horse, you know, just barely joking here. So, but when I saw that horse coming on stage, I say, wow, this is beautiful. And I'm very attracted by the aesthetic. So the show I create are very, you know, I'm trying to reach a level of aesthetic and a level of beauty that is bring you to a world of dream. And that's what it had, you know, the integration of the equestrian arts and the performing arts with the high technology, with, I think it's just bring you a better spirit overall as a spectator.
You mentioned the playfulness of the animals, magnificent beasts that they are. How many different breeds are involved in the show, and do you see different personalities in the breeds?
Yes, we do see different personality in the breeds. We do see also different thing that they can do. That's why we have so many breeds. And we have about almost 11 breeds. But the main one, like we have Arabian horse, they are a little bit smaller, but they are playful and they are more herding. So they like to be in herd, they like to be in group, and they like to play. So we have those Arabian more for what we call liberty, which are, they're just running free on stage, and they're just play between them and their trainer. Also, we have a lot of Spanish horse, which are much better for what we call dressage, which is the high school, and we have some horses, we call them the dancers. So they like, you know, with that, the piaf and having high, bringing their legs very elegantly, and they move very elegantly. And they also have very long mane, and most of them are white. And we have quarter horse, and, you know, behind quarter horse, you have different type that are very similar. We call them Appaloosa, we call them paint horse, but they are the American quarter horse. And these are more like to go fast, so they're more for the trick riding, Roman riding, and they're more for dynamic moment.
So you mentioned dressage, but we should be clear that this isn't just an elaborate dressage show. There are many different vignettes that are going on throughout the history of horse and man. Is there an overarching theme or storyline to the show?
Yeah, well, we call the show Odysseo because it's an odyssey. It's a journey where horse and man go to discover the most beautiful landscape in the world. So how we do that? We discover the stage has layers, and then you just arrive and it's a simple forest, and then the forest disappears, and then a mountain appears, and behind the mountain, and it's a real mountain, it peaks at 4 floor high, so it's about almost 40 feet high. And then behind, and you have to understand, this is very deep. The stage is about twice the size of a hockey rink, so just to give you the scope of it. And behind the screen, behind the mountain, there's a screen that we project 3D, almost 3D, I mean it's 2D HD images on a screen that is 3x an IMAX theater screen, so just to give you. So all this, I call it a 6D show, the first 6D show in the world, because there's so many layers and there's so many deepness. At one point, but many time in the show, you just look and you feel like you're part of it. It's like watching one of those greatest Hollywood movie where you see those magnificent canyon or, desert scene, and you really feel it's there, it's for real, and you really feel that you're into the action. At the end of the show, the bottom of the stage, which is half of the stage, get filled with 40,000 gallons of water, and the horse and the acrobat just splash in the water, and it's just spectacular. Also, talking about the acrobatic world, we really have integrated some acrobatic on the horse, but also we have created a new way of doing acrobatic with the horse. And at one point, there's a merry-go-round, which was my favorite place to go when I was young, just on a merry-go-round, and a real merry-go-round coming from the ceiling of the tent. And it's a huge machine, and it's coming down, and then you have acrobatic, and everything is done in slow motion. So the acrobats define gravity and on rotating poles. So it's just...
Wait a minute here now. What is it about the water up in Montreal that all of this spectacle comes from? Is it because of the deep freeze in Montreal in the winter that it stimulates certain creative brain cells?
Well, of course, the show you go through different seasons with the images, and I think probably because we're very influenced by the weather, and every day. This is very unique to Montreal. Of course, if you live in San Francisco, once in a while you look at the weather. As Montrealer, or if everyone live northeast that far, every day, every moment of the day, maybe five times. I watch weather when I'm in Canada at least 4 times a day minimum, because it's always changing. You never know what to expect. Don't know if it's going to rain, going to slow, going to be sunny. And then, we're really attached to the weather. But also we are very attached to nature. And this show, that's what I wanted to do. When I created the show, I wanted to bring nature to a stage. So instead of doing it fake, I just really brought the nature to the stage. I brought the mountain. I brought the forest. The forest is, of course, it doesn't grow, but it's a real forest, and it appear and disappear. And with the technology these days, you can push the limit of what's been done into any type of spectacular. And we have surpassed, and the show surpassed, the most high technology show that ever seen. But at the same time, with the relationship you see between the horse and the people, and you see it's real, it's not a circus. You don't hear whip clacking, and you don't feel that the horse are not too happy to be there. They're just come, and for we give them the stage, and to become their playground. And so this is where they come to play, and that's very moving.
And that's part of the reason for the scale of the arena. We're talking about the biggest tent in the world. So you're allowing these horses not to just run around in circles. They actually have the room to roam.
Yeah, we want the horse to be horse. So you have to give them the space. And that's what we've done. And we also want them to... Half of the show, they're totally free, meaning that they have no ropes, no attachment. At one point, you get to see 42 horses free on a stage, and they have room, and they can run, and they can just walk, and they can just play. And this is, we're very urbanized people. We don't get to see that much of these thing that when you see horses interact between them and interact with some trainers that, just talk to them and tell them where to go, not to go. Sometimes it doesn't work, and that's the fun of it. You just feel that it's for real. We doors are not forced to do what they have to do.
Well, I understand that the four-legged stars of the show traveled to the Bay Area on a chartered McDonnell Douglas MD-11 jet airliner. I imagine they upgraded to the seats with extra legroom.
They don't like to travel. Horse don't like to travel. They're like me. But, you know, we do travel. I do travel.
No argument for the window seat, then.
No. And we don't serve caviar, you know, to be true. But, you know, I prefer to have them in the flying in a airplane than driving for 40 hours in a row. So that's the philosophy here is we do everything to support the horse, and we do everything to make our horse to be happy. So 4 or 5 hour flight is much more comfortable than 37 hours of driving.
Speaking of their comfort, what sort of staff is responsible for the horses? Now, when the show was in L.A., there was a nearby ranch for the horses to roam and relax and some further downtime. Where is that special place here in the Bay Area?
Between every city, the horse have at least 12 days of holidays. Every time we find a place where they can go and have paddocks, trying to find some green that grows, not always possible in Los Angeles or in San Francisco in the California. With drought. But they were, I don't know the exact place, they were about 45 minutes away from downtown San Francisco, so they had time. And we don't move that much. We move 5 times a year. So they don't, you know, it's not a circus where you move every week. It has nothing to do with that. And, you know, they move less than some of the race horses or the, you know, any rodeo horses. These horses just always on the road. Our horses, they get those 12 days relax in a farm, and then they start to work. But when I say they start to work, they start the show. But obviously, they come back here, and sometimes they're even more happy than being in the farm, because this is where they find all their friends. This is where they just, every day, they get exercise. They get, it's just play. It's just fun. It's not work.
Is there one particular bossy horse that's like the union rep to make sure they have the appropriate time off?
We have a lot of stallions, and they all have strong characters. But there's no one dominating horse. There's no one who wants to say to all the others, I'm the boss. Of course, we have no mare, which help because they don't look after fight, and they don't look after, you know, which one is going to get the mare. So we have only male horses. And that's why we could have so many stallions. Why we have stallions is they're much more proud, and also they keep the longest mane. So if you nurturate stallions or castrate, they will lose half of their hair. So we like them to be very beautiful.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this awesome, and that's not a word that should be used often, but for this occasion, it really is awesome display of horsepower. Enchanté, Norman Naturel.
Merci beaucoup.
Norman Latourelle, director creator of Odiseo, on site near AT&T Park. Odiseo gets underway tonight. Tickets and information at cavalia.net. Still to come, some tickets for How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, as well as Teatro Flamenco and theater and orchestra Parnassus, the Parnassus Symphony, getting underway. I'll be talking with Stephen Polson later this hour, and we'll have some tickets for their concerts coming up. Stay with us here on KLW.
Mairena, una perrita gorda te viada media ocena. Y al confitero de la campana me ha puesto y le gano dulce. Merengue, 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 vendo yo por breva dulce. Y al confitero de la campana me ha puesto y le gano dulce. Merengue, 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 vendo yo por breva. Yo la llevo corga, corga y arbellana, corga, corga y arbellana. Debajo de la chocita y está la niña cota, pa' que ni el viento ni el agua le den, que le den una chipita. Son muy buenas, son muy buenas, yo soy el que la vende de la propia de Mairena. Y una perrita gorda te voy a dar media cena.
That's Jose Valencia, guest of Teatro Flamenco, performing live in our KALW studios. Teatro Flamenco is the second oldest dance company in the Bay Area after the San Francisco Ballet, founded in 1966. The group was founded during a flowering of Latino cultural pride in the 1960s, and every year since its inception, the group has presented a home season of performances here in San Francisco. Its current show, the North American premiere of Ad Libitum, or How I Freed Myself from My Chains, with choreography and direction by the great Andres Marin, who also dances with Carola Zertuche and Christina Hall. Singer Jose Valencia, guitarist Salvador Gutierrez, and percussionist Daniel Suarez round out the group at the Fort Mason Center this weekend. And in addition to Jose Valencia, Christina Hall and Carola Zertuche join me. One word about Jose: he's a flamenco singer who keeps evolving since his early performances at the age of six and has been a consistent presence in his home of Andalusia. Beautiful singing.
Thank you.
So now you have to tell us what we were listening to. Or perhaps one of your colleagues can tell us more of what Jose was just singing about.
¿Quiere que le expliques qué estábamos escuchando, qué cantaste?
Pues mira, estábamos escuchando se denomina pregón, y se utilizaba antiguamente, antes de haber televisiones y cosas de estas, para anunciarse y para vender, pues, productos naturales que la gente tenía para ganarse la vida, ¿no? Entonces, en vez de hablarlo, la gente lo cantaba, ¿no?
So it's a song called Pregón that in the olden days, before there was television, people would sing to be able to promote like products, and it was the way that they would sell their goods in the street. And so it's a very old traditional form of flamenco.
Típico de la zona de España en general, ¿no? Del país donde vivo, que bueno, la gente, en vez de pegar voces, pues lo hacía cantando de una manera agradable para que la gente, pues bueno, saliera a la puerta o al balcón a ver y a escuchar a esa persona, a ver qué es lo que estaba vendiendo, ¿no? Era una manera de llamar la atención.
So it's a song that they sing all throughout Spain. And instead of like screaming throughout the street about what they're selling, it was another way for them to like sing so that people would come out and buy things.
The explanation of Jose Valencia, as explained by Christina Teresa Hall. Christina, also in studio, has made Spain her home for the past 12 years or so. In 2011, she was a finalist in the Sadler's Wells Dance Choreography Competition in London for her creation Blackbird. Among her many other performances, in December of 2013, she collaborated with the Cuarteto Castilla to perform flamenco to Shostakovich, his string quartet number 8, at the Teatro Cajasol de Sevilla. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Welcome to KLW.
Thank you.
And she's also joined by Carola Zertuche, who was born in Torreon, Mexico. She began her dance career in Mexico City, moved to Spain for further study in the art, and is now in the Bay Area. She continues her dancing career as a performer, choreographer, and teacher, and she is Teatro Flamenco's artistic director. Welcome to you, Carola.
Thank you.
So I have to ask, Carola, how did you get the great Andres Marin to participate in this year's performances?
Because I know Andres since many years, and actually he was one of the person that he changed my vision of see flamenco, and then we became friends, and we've been talking for like 3 years, and then into this year we get together and did the show.
Well, he's had quite an interesting history in his home country. Could you share a little bit about his background?
Of Andres?
Yes.
Ah, yes. See, I know all his background. And
could you tell us a little bit about his earlier years?
But he started in Sevilla, and then in the beginning, I think people, until now, they see he's doing very different way, of dancing. And the people, they didn't accept him. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Not much until now. I think people, they realize what the way that he see flamenco and the arts. And he's very artistic.
Well, he's been called the greatest flamenco dancer of his generation and the Picasso of flamenco. So you were in for quite a treat this weekend at the Fort Mason Center, if you can make it to see the Teatro Flamenco performances. Christina, I'm wondering about your early involvement in flamenco, and what is it about the art form that intrigued you to move to Spain for further study and then making it your home for a long time?
Well, I discovered flamenco here in San Francisco, where I was born, when I was 16 years old. And for me, it was a way, because for me, it was very difficult at that age to express myself speaking. So when I discovered flamenco, it was my way of expressing who I was. And it was a path for me to find myself as a person, no? And from the first moment that I saw it, I just knew, I felt so strongly about it that I was going to move to Spain and make my life this. And so 15 years later, I've been living there for 15 years now. It's my passion in life, you know?
Well, there are different styles of flamenco. This is going to be a modern performance. Can you share with me what the different styles that you've learned?
Well, curiously
Explain
enough,
what they are.
The first teacher that I ever had from Spain was Andres Marin. And people say that his form of dancing is very modern and very contemporary, which I would say yes, but I think more so he's able to do these things because he knows tradition so well. He knows the flamenco tradition very, very well, and is able then to step outside of it. And his way of expressing himself through flamenco is very, very personal and very creative and very artistic, and he's always looking for new ways to develop his way of telling his story through flamenco, no? But based on the tradition, he steps out and creates his own language through it.
Carola Zertuche, this work started out in France as a solo work, and now I believe you adapted it with some other dancers now and along with live musicians.
Yeah.
What was that transition?
Actually, he adapted for us, for Christina and I.
Okay.
Yeah. This show, he premiered, in Paris and then in Sevilla, last September.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And Christina, what will we see on stage then with the dancers and the singers?
Oh, many things, many surprises here. Amazing musicians as Jose Valencia, Salvador Gutierrez with the guitar, the percussion, Daniel Suarez. It's just musically, for me, it's amazing. Yes. And then also the way Andres dances to this music is very inspiring, very different, that I personally feel that no dance form has seen anything like this before.
Well, the title of the show is Ad Libitum.
Ad Libitum,
I'm sorry. And so what limitations are you placed on, or is it all free?
It's all free.
Yeah. And actually, this that he say a lot, like, it's a letter of freedom. that the people they will see that in the show is an open letter.
Mm, very nice. Well, Jose Valencia was kind enough to bring a CD of some of his recent work called Directo. Jose, is there a particular track you'd like to share with us?
Que si hay algún tema en particular que quieres compartir.
Bueno, todos los temas, la verdad, que están trabajados y buscados con mucho cariño. Así que a todos les tengo cariño por igual. Si hay algo en especial, puede ser la bulería número 5, Mi locura, por decir alguno, ¿no? Por cambiar algo un poco más diferente. Pero la verdad que es un disco que al cual todos los temas le tengo mucho cariño. Un disco que hice en directo, un disco que hice de una sola toma, porque era la apuesta que hice, que quería hacer, y en la cual, bueno, pues me siento muy orgulloso del trabajo finalizado.
So it's a CD he created in live, and for him, all of the tracks on the CD are special, and he loves them all the same. But if there's one in particular he'd like to share today, would be track number 5. ¿Cómo se llamaba?
En mi locura.
En mi locura.
And crazy.
Music recorded by Jose Valencia. Thank you all for coming in. I wish you wonderful performances this weekend at Fort Mason Center. Information at theaterflamenco.org.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Si existiera alguna forma de intentar de convencerte de lo duro que es la vida sin saber lo que uno tiene. Hablar contigo lo que mi corazón siente, poder hablar contigo lo que el corazón siente, y a revolver en una esquina que me encontré con tu persona. Y es que no entiendo la razón que me vuelve loca, loca.
Artistry of Jose Valencia. His CD DVD is available this weekend as part of the celebrations of Teatro Flamenco, teatroflamenco.org for more information. And on Saturday, there's a special party at Fort Mason at the Firehouse, catered by Lolo. You're not going to want to miss that. Information at teatroflamenco.org. We do have some tickets to give away to this weekend's performances for either Friday at 8, Saturday at 8, or Sunday afternoon at 3 if you call us now in studio, 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134 for Teatro Flamenco. Call now. Some wonderful performances coming up with extremely special guests. Andres Marin as part of Teatro Flamenco's performances this weekend at the Fort Mason Center. 415-841-4134.
quiero cantar tu sol, alegría de amor, la aroma de tu cuerpo.
Executive washroom. Yeah, we're all down here. The meeting's at 4:30. Come on down. We'll make plans.
Big meeting today, huh?
Yeah.
Hear anything about what Finch is planning?
JB set the board meeting, so he must have come up with something. You know, fellas, I'm getting a little afraid of Finch.
Me too. If we don't stop him pretty soon,
he'll probably have us all working in the mailroom.
Good luck to us.
Hi, man.
Oh, hi, bud. Hey, did you hear anything?
Chaps, our worries are over.
What do you mean?
Oh, I'm so happy I can cry. Finch is going ahead with...
What?
Oh, well, believe me, he's dead.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
No, I don't know. Finch has a way of bouncing. I wouldn't believe he was dead even if I read his obituary.
Maybe right.
Ordinarily, I'd agree with you. Finch is very smart. But let's not forget that he's now in advertising, and that does something to men's brains.
Fred, I'll see you at the bus stop.
Does anybody see my wild look for you?
Get into that thing if I can.
Hi, man.
Oh, hi.
All set for the big meeting?
Well, could be. It could be. Wish me luck.
Good luck. Go get him, baby.
Good luck. All the best. Lots of luck.
Yes, there's that face. That face that somehow I trust. It may embarrass you to hear me say it, but say it I must. Say it I must. You have the cool, clear eyes of a seeker of wisdom and truth. Yet there's that upturned chin and the grin of impetuous youth. Oh, I believe in you. I believe in you.
A little bit of a mashup of both live performance and the original movie version of Robert Morris and Company from I Gotta Stop That Man, from How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying It, elided with Kyle Stoner live in studio. Thank you for sharing that, Kyle.
Oh, it was delightful.
Kyle is tackling the incredible role of J. Pierpont Finch in How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, a wonderful show that is being presented now by the Bay Area Musicals exclamation mark. Performances through December 19th. Kyle's here in studio along with Matthew McCoy, the founder and artistic director of BAM. Thank you for coming in once again, Matt.
Thank you. Thank you, David.
Thanks for having us.
Of course. What a great show. I mean, have you performed the show before?
I've never done it before. I love it, though. I'm super excited to have the chance.
Yeah. Matt, how did you come up with this particular show This starts off the season.
This is our very first season, brand new theater company, and I was thinking about what show can we do to open up with, and if we're in San Francisco and we are in the middle of the tech boom industry, why not do a show that's about big business that also kind of makes fun of it? Not going to lie. So that's how I got the idea of doing How to Succeed. It's a classic, has been done in the city in about 5 years as well. Won 9 Tonys back in 1961. The Pulitzer Prize. Fantastic score. I mean, you can't go wrong with this show.
I know. And it's just a whole revival thanks to the whole Mad Men phenomenon.
The 60s are back. The 60s
right
are
in. It happened to be one of the very first musical I was involved in as a junior high kid back in Vernon, Connecticut. We used to do a summer musical, and it just hooked me on the whole idea of the musical.
Oh, good.
Have either of you seen the various revivals that have come through on Broadway?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the one that was most recent. I guess that was like 2011 that came out with Daniel Radcliffe in New York.
I was previewing some tracks on that, and he sounds like he's 11 years old.
And he looks about 11 years
old. Yeah, it's amazing. I think he has a small voice already, but paired with the fact that he's new to musical theater and then he has to put on an American accent, it does something to his voice that makes it very
Very interesting to listen to.
Matt, tell me about the rest of your cast that you've assembled for this.
Our cast is great. There are 18 actors total in the cast, all professional adult actors coming from adult. I say that because I used to work, I worked at other companies where some our kids are in the show. So now it's like, okay, they're all adults, everyone. They're professional actors in the show. No kids in this. And they come from all over the Bay Area. Some come from as far as Martinez, North Bay. Where do you live, Kyle?
Napa.
Napa. Okay.
I've heard of that.
From San Jose. A lot of them have performed in other theater companies around here as well. 42nd Street Moon, Ray of Light, SF Playhouse, San Jose Stage. So it's a really talented cast that get comedy. That's really hard, is for them to understand and get this type of comedy of musical theater, which is pretty fantastic. It's great.
And the venue of the Marines, I have yet to catch a show there. I'm looking forward to catching the Marines Memorial Theater. Is it? Tell us about the theater. How many seats?
Theater seats 576 total. So it's got a balcony and mezzanine section. And our set is ginormous. So how we're going to squeeze the set and 18 people on stage is going to be a spectacle in itself when you come see the show. Mm-hmm. I think you might not even see the choreography or the show itself. You'd be like, how the hell do those people get up on stage? It's amazing.
Kyle, tell me a little bit about your background in musical theater.
Yeah, well, when I was a kid, I was raised on movie musicals like Carousel in Oklahoma, and I loved that stuff. But when I was adult, I went into hospitality, living in Napa, naturally. But eventually, I got a bug that I just felt like I had to perform, and I auditioned for a local community college production of Man of La Mancha, which was the first musical theater show I ever did, and that was in 2010. And then since then, I didn't really go to school for it, but I went to that college production, and then I decided to start auditioning around at real companies, and I started getting jobs. So I thought, well, I'll keep doing it and see what happens. And so I've done mostly Shakespeare and musical theater throughout the California regionally, mostly.
And there seems to be this quasi-obsession with characters that begin with the letter J.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Jack and Into the Woods.
I've done Jesus and J. Pierpont Finch. I don't know. If it's got a J in the name, give it to me and I can probably do it.
So what's your next role?
Julie and Carousel. No, I would do it.
You would make a lovely Julie.
Thank you. I've always thought that too.
And speaking of what's next, after this production, which runs through December 19th, what does BAM have up for its sleeve for the rest of its season?
So in February, we'll be doing Hair, actually, the 1960s tribal American love rock musical. And then we'll close the summer in July with La Caja Fall, right after Pride. And then a year, it'll be a year anniversary, actually, since the gay marriage equality got passed by the government. So that's pretty exciting that it kind of all matches up.
Very nice. Well, I wish you a wonderful performance for this. We do have some tickets for this as well. How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, the opening night, November 28th. We have four pairs of tickets for that performance. 415-841-4134 on this ticket giveaway prior to Thanksgiving extravaganza edition of Open Air. 415-841-4134. Matthew McCoy, Kyle Stoner, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, David.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Wish you a great run, and we're going to end with the classic from the recording, original recording with Robert Morris doing the Brotherhood of Man.
Oh,
wonderful production number.
Great one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now you may join the Elks, my friend. And I may join the Shriners, and other men may carry cards as members of the Diners. Still others wear a golden key or small Greek letter pin. But I have learned there's one great club that all of us are in. There is a brotherhood of man, a benevolent brotherhood of man, a noble tie that binds all human hearts and minds into one brotherhood of man. Your lifelong membership is free. Keep a giving each brother all you can. Oh, aren't you proud to be in that fraternity, the great big brotherhood of man?
Now, Wally, I want you to remember that before you consider firing Mr. Bigley.
Who's considering that? Get the hell out of here!
You see, I know what's on your mind. You'd like to clear out the whole place. I mean, from top to bottom. It's the obvious move, but stop and think. One man may seem incompetent, another not make sense, while others look like quite a waste of company expense. They need a brother's leadership, so please don't do them in. Remember, mediocrity is not a mortal sin. There,
we're
in
the brotherhood of men, dedicated to giving all we can.
Oh, aren't you proud to be in that fraternity?
The great big brotherhood of men.
Ow, what'd I do?
No kidding. Is there really a brotherhood,
yes, brother,
of men,
brother,
on the level of brotherhood of men?
Oh, yes, oh, yes, a noble tie that binds all human hearts and minds
into one brotherhood of men.
Oh, yes, our lifelong membership is free. Keep giving each brother all you can.
From the movie version of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, Robert Morris and Company. As you'll recall, Robert Morris making a second career of his role in the ad biz as one of the stars of Mad Men. The production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying at the Marines Memorial is running through December 19th, opening night, November 28th. Tickets might already be taken for the ones that we're offering. You can still give us a try, though, 841-4134. And if not, well, we're going to have some tickets to another event that's happening a little bit down the peninsula way, the Parnassus Symphony. Game of Pairs movement from Béla Bartók's Concerto for Orchestra, which started out with a pair of bassoonists. We heard Stephen Paulson with Rob Weir in that recording of the San Francisco Symphony under the direction of Herbert Blomstadt. Stephen Paulson, in addition to being a fine bassoonist who joined the San Francisco Symphony as principal bassoonist in 1977, is director of the Symphony Parnassus since 1998, and his concert of music of Bartok, as well as Barbers in Knoxville, Summer of 1915, with soprano Hope Briggs, and the Rossini William Tell Overture gets underway this coming Sunday at 3 p.m. in the Herbst Theater. Stephen in studio now to share some details about that concert. Welcome back, Stephen.
It's great to be back here, David. I always like coming to the station and talking with you.
And a great program. What inspired you to work on the Bartok? Is it perhaps something you're also doing nearby at Davies this season?
We've already done it at Davies this season. But the reason I choose a repertoire to do is to make the members of the orchestra happy. They're a very sophisticated bunch musically, and they like all the big, challenging repertoire. So we're always doing big Strauss tone poems, Mahler symphonies, Rite of Spring, and the Bartok is one that we had done maybe 10 years ago, and enough people wanted to do it again, so we're putting it on again.
Well, it's some ambitious repertoire for a community orchestra. How do you manage?
Well, I think I have experience with this music because I play it all the time, and I think that the members of the orchestra have, one, the capability, and two, the desire to attack this kind of stuff. And we delve into it, and we work it up slowly, and we're ready for a performance. We're ready to rock.
Well, you've certainly got an amazing history and breadth that you're bringing to the Bartok, especially having not only performed it with Blomstedt, and I'm sure with most recently with MTT. Right?
Oh, yes, many times.
Several times, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And what is, and you're saying this is the second time you've done it recently with, well, within 10 years of the Symphony Parnassus. What are you bringing to it each different time as a conductor?
Well, there's nothing consciously different that I'm doing now from what I did 10 years ago, except for the fact that I think I've gained a lot of experience in 10 years. So maybe a little bit of efficiency and preparation of something. And things happen when you live a whole lifetime with a piece of music, as your own mind sort of evolves with that piece. And it's nothing really specific, but I'm hoping that it's a better performance than last time.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've performed the Barber Summer of 1915, one of my favorite works of Samuel Barber, with the San Francisco Symphony many times.
I have. The San Francisco Symphony has done it quite recently, actually, and I was listening to that performance from the audience. I was not actually playing in it. But there are so many wonderful recordings of that piece, some which I've discovered more recently thanks to YouTube. For instance, there is an Eileen Farrell recording of it from 1949. See, I always thought the 1950 Eleanor Stieber recording was the first one. Well, Eileen Farrell recorded it in the almost never heard full orchestra version. It's usually with a chamber orchestra, is what we're doing. But it was a full orchestra, and it was conducted by, of all people, Bernard Herrmann, the famous movie composer who collaborated with Alfred Hitchcock a lot. And he was conducting that performance, and it's you can hear it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Well, the season started for the San Francisco Symphony with you guys in a wonderfully acclaimed European tour. Tell us some highlights about that. What was the experience like this time?
Well, it was interesting going to one place that we had never been before, and that American orchestras don't tour to all that often, and that is actually the birthplace of half of my ancestors, and that's Bucharest, Romania. And there's the George Enescu Festival there, which happens once every 2 years, and they invite all the greatest of the greats, star conductors, soloists, orchestras, and it's really quite an event over there, and we were part of it this year, so mm-hmm. That was a highlight.
And now settling back into this new season with MTT and Davies,
yeah.
Particular highlights as a bassoonist that you're looking forward to this season?
Well, February 5th and 6th, I think it is, I will be the soloist in Mozart's Bassoon Concerto.
Oh, great
with,
work.
With Masi Suzuki conducting, and I'm looking forward to that very much.
As we will, as well. But in the meantime, we can look forward to this Sunday afternoon's performance in the new Herbst Theater of Rossini, Barber, and Bartok under the baton of Stephen Paulson and the Parnassus Symphony. Information at symphonyparnassus.org. Stephen, I wonder. I wish you some wonderful performances. And what have you heard about the new Herbst that we should be looking forward to?
Well, I haven't actually heard any sounds in the new auditorium. I know they added wood to some of the surfaces, but I think the major change acoustically is going to be from the new shell, which completely surrounds an orchestra and gets the sound out into the audience. Before, it was a lot of velvet curtains that absorbed a lot of sound.
We're
very excited about how.
Excellent. Well, I wish you a wonderful performance on Sunday and beyond with the symphony, and we'll have you on again soon.
Thanks, David.
More music from Bartok, the final movement of the Concerto for Orchestra. We do have some tickets available to the Symphony Parnassus for people that call 415-841-4134. Tickets for this Sunday's 3 p.m. performance in the newly acoustically revived Herbst Theater. 415-841-4134. Music from Bartok's Concerto for Orchestra, to be performed by the Symphony Parnassus this Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Herbst Theater. Tickets available at their website, symphonyparnassus.org. And we have a couple of pairs of tickets for you, dear listener, if you call 415-841-4134, 415-841-4134. Stephen Paulson conducting Symphony Parnassus at Herbst Theater. I'm David LaTulipe. That's Open Air for this week, November 19th, 2015. I'll be taking next Thursday off for Thanksgiving, but I will be sitting in this coming Sunday evening for Sarah Cahill and Revolutions per Minute, 2 hours of new and classical music, this Sunday evening from 8 to 10. And then join me again on Monday evening for Explorations in Music as we continue our exploration of the string quartets of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart in his final years in Vienna with Robert Greenberg and the Alexander String Quartet, Monday evening at 9. Open Air is produced by Niels Swinkels. If you've got a segment suggestion, send me an email, david@kalw.org. A reminder that all of our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. Thanks for listening, and happy Thanksgiving. Thank you.